From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. First, some foresight from Ezekiel, Isaiah, Matthew, Paul, and Pat Robertson, who spoke this week of what will follow the preordained re-election of Donald Trump. The Russians and North Korea will threaten us. There will be at least two attempts on the president's life. Blood will run in our streets. Great hordes will move against Israel and be wiped out by God. Then 5 years of blessed peace, followed by cleansing apocalypse.
The only thing that will fulfill what the word of Jesus, that I'm going to give you in a minute, is some kind of an asteroid strike on the globe.
He lets Matthew pick it up from there.
And then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and all of the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory.
Then that asteroid strike, and then the rapture.
And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds from one end of the heaven to the other.
To recap,
there's going to be a war. Ezekiel 38 is going to be the next thing down the line. Then a time of peace. Then maybe the end.
But first, the election is coming up. At which time?
According to what I believe the Lord told me, the president is going to be reelected. I'm saying by all means, get out and vote for whoever you want to vote for.
Another get-out-the-vote message of a kind directed to a particular audience. That's the theme of the hour. Fervent messages made to measure, both sincere and, later this hour, cynical. But sincerity rules this segment. After all, some of us pray. Some of us have already voted. And lo, some of us, when called upon, stand. All will be revealed.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Holy cow.
On Tuesday this week, Congressperson Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez undertook a socially distant get-out-the-vote effort through the streaming platform Twitch. Her pitch opened the three-hour-plus event and closed it, too.
First things first, if you are able to vote, we are here, iwillvote.com. Make sure that you make your voting plan. And if you can't vote, if you're under the age of 18, make sure you talk to someone that can vote and try to direct them to iwillvote.com and make sure that they get their voting plan in place.
But 400,000 plus viewers hadn't pulled up AOC's first Twitch stream to hear her pitch. They were mainly there to watch her game.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, my God. I knew it.
Oh. The first-term representative's first kill in the game Among Us, which has lately become popular among video game streamers, some of whom joined her that evening.
AOC, is that weird to just call you AOC?
No. You guys can call me AOC. Mike Pence can't call me AOC, but you guys can.
All right.
Let's go. Cool.
Though many have politicked on social media before, the old school playbook of the ground game and TV ads still dictate the 21st century campaign. But from the COVID era emerges a new playbook, according to The Verge political reporter McKenna Kelly. And in that book, Tuesday's live stream marks a landmark event. McKenna, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So the stream was a massive success as far as viewership goes, but it was also billed as a get-out-the-vote effort. Do we know how successful that was?
At the peak point of the stream, folks at the DNC were saying that they were getting the most referrals to the website, to iwillvote.com, than they ever have.
Do we know how many that was?
I was not able to get a specific figure. But during the vice presidential debate, they bought flywillvote.com. And then when Taylor Swift said that she was going to endorse Joe Biden, they bought taylorwillvote.com. So there have been huge referrals to this link before. And saying that the AOC stream was bigger than, say, that huge viral moment with The Fly and Taylor Swift, who is arguably one of the most famous celebrities in the world, says a lot.
Now, a lot of folks weren't going to sit through the entire thing, but there were moments that were clipped and put on Twitter or YouTube.
like when AOC talked about socialized medicine with H-bomber guy?
You go to the doctor and you say, I have this problem, and then they prescribe you the medicine, and then you just go pick it up, and that's it. And then you go home and you Google how much it would have cost in America.
Oh my gosh.
Later he kills her.
I'm actually a bit heartbroken.
But hey, life is cheap. Can you talk about that moment?
So people and users on Twitch are accustomed to diving in and out and jumping in the chat and chatting for a little bit and then maybe going watching some TV or some other videos. So an important part of the Twitch culture is the clips function. And when people do catch something interesting, those clips and those conversations can go viral and reach even bigger audiences on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube than they ever could on Twitch, because Twitch, of course, is live. But these clips will last forever.
Now, Polygon senior editor Patricia Hernandez wrote this week that it wasn't just about organizing and savvy. This was fandom. Those hundreds of thousands of viewers included thousands of stans, referring in this case to the AOC diehards. For people who, you know, aren't as hep to the jive as I am, stan is a term that's drawn from the title of an Eminem song, right?
Right.
My girlfriend's jealous because I talk about you 24/7, but she don't know you like I know you, Slim. No one does. She don't know what it was like for people like us growing up. You gotta call me, man. I'll be the biggest fan you'll ever lose. Sincerely yours, Stan. P.S. We should be together, too.
When it comes to stan culture with pop culture and movies and television, oftentimes people will draw fan art of their favorite characters. And people were doing that for AOC in 2018. And she was reposting that fan art on her Instagram page. So she has been building this community of people for a very, very long time. And that's why Tuesday's stream was so successful. She already had this base. There are already people who stand H-Bomber Guy. There are already people who stand Hassan Piker and Pokimane and the other folks who were on there. There was just a bunch of communities colliding in a really interesting way. And then, of course, the Ed Markey stuff is the most important part here.
So you're talking about Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey. His online supporters helped propel him past a primary challenge from Joe Kennedy III earlier this year. How did stans play a role in that campaign and in his victory?
Markey is a big internet guy. He has been behind the internet for a very long time, introducing privacy rights. He's a big net neutrality supporter. So he's always kind of been in this realm.
And by a very long time, you're talking about 3 decades.
Exactly. So he's been there from the very beginning, right? But it was new folks that they brought on their digital team, folks who really paid very close attention to what the Bernie Sanders campaign did in 2016, engaging with authentic organic content from supporters there. And they saw how powerful that was. So they were building meme pages for Markey. There's a bunch of little accounts on Twitter. Harry Styles stands for Ed, Barbs for Ed, which is the word that refers to Nicki Minaj stands. Really built a crazy and kind of strange grassroots community of people to really propel Markey into re-election in September.
I'm Ed Markey.
I'm Ed Markey. I'm running for Congress because I want to fight for the principles that I believe in.
I'm f***ing Ed Markey and I'll f***ing fight with you.
New York Times cultural critic Amanda Hess has written extensively about the stanification of politics, and she's often noted that aesthetics can become a shorthand for ideas, that a meme that feels so true and becomes so popular actually begins to maybe obscure a little the votes that a candidate has taken or the bills they want to see become law. Do you think this happened this year during the Markey Kennedy primary?
It absolutely happened this year. People who really supported him online would pick out specific moments of humanity and authenticity with him. His Nike Air Jordan shoes that he wore to knock on doors became symbolism for how embedded in the community he is, right? He's not wearing loafers, but also just like his introduction of the Green New Deal, his support of that and the supporters really wanting to push forward on climate change and putting memes about Markey saving the environment did kind of obscure a lot of his past history. A lot of folks who support him now have a big gripe with his vote to approve the Iraq war. So a lot of that was kind of left behind.
Let's go back to Twitch for a sec. Ideally, participating in democracy requires more than hanging out. Tweeting is kind of a joke these days because people will sometimes do that instead of actually engaging in politics. Is there any danger of standum politics becoming like a sad substitute for genuine political engagement?
Right. You can't vote online. All of this excitement needs to transition into action. And that's a very difficult metric to measure. You can't really poll everyone who retweets a Markey tweet to make sure that they voted for him, right? But there also has always been toxic culture in standum and fandom, right?
There was in the Markey enterprise some really nasty people talking about the Kennedy assassination.
We saw even with the Bernie campaign in 2016 and 2020, the idea and concept of Bernie bros who are harassing people online. There's also the fandom around Kamala Harris, the K-Hive, who also get criticized frequently online for launching terrible attacks on people on the internet too. When I spoke to a ton of the stans who have these accounts and kind of engage with the community on a daily basis, the community itself does a lot of self-policing. So if they did see a really terrible JFK post, they would all tell the people in their Discord chats, in their Slack chats, to go and report it. But the excitement and things like this does seem to inspire a lot of hateful and toxic behavior.
Seems only natural to compare AOC's success online to the Biden campaign's inroads into newer platforms, which are much more modest. Should the Democrats expect a similar level of online engagement from the Biden campaign? Or is that like asking apples to act like oranges?
When the first kind of wave of the pandemic hit in the spring, Biden's team had a very difficult time transitioning to the internet. Their first Zoom call with supporters, the audio was busted.
I know this country will summon the spirit of empathy, decency, and unity. We've never failed in
a moment. A lot of those very internet savvy digital folks from the Bernie team have moved over to the Biden campaign. They launched a Twitch channel themselves a couple weeks ago, and their first stream was just a video shot of the back of an Amtrak train with lo-fi hip-hop beats playing in the background. Something for people just to have on while they work, which is something that already takes place on the platform and showed a real fluency in Twitch's audience, right? Their design and creative team are doing design streams on Twitch now, too. Those streams are extremely popular. There's so many famous Instagram artists who will just go and draw on Twitch for a little bit and talk to their followers. And it's hard for me to talk about Biden's strategy without talking about their bout in the Animal Crossing New Horizons Nintendo game. The game is all about design. The Biden campaign introduced yard signs in September, and people would take screenshots with a little Biden-Harris yard sign in front of their virtual little home and post them on social media where they go viral. And then last week, the Biden campaign was like, okay, we saw how you guys like the yard signs. We're making an entire island for you to visit because you can't go to field offices anymore because of social distancing, right?
I have to say, whoever built this put a lot of work into it. You can see the little Team Joe signs everywhere. One of their villagers is a bald eagle.
And there's even a little Joe Biden figure who walks around. And when you talk to him, he says, no malarkey. They just really took the time to familiarize themselves with the game. And those people who go and visit this island, they're taking screenshots and they're posting them on social media. But the thing is that when you take these big risks, there is a chance for you to have like a hello fellow kids moment, right? It seems disingenuous. It feels like you're doing this for clout. But for them, they were really attentive and respectful. And I think that's why the payoff was so big.
They tried to learn the language.
They did.
McKenna, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, this was so much fun.
McKenna Kelly is a politics reporter for The Verge.
Coming up, we looked at the future of political campaigning. Now let's consider the past.
This is On the Media.